The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. Joining me, as always, is Dan Trillaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Craig. I'm well. Good morning. How are you today?
Doing swell, and we're happy to have Rob Sackowitz with us today. Not only a gambling recovery, but a guy who's now paying it forward, has opened up a gambling recovery program in New Jersey called Right Choice, Right Recovery. Rob, how you been, pal?
Very good. Good morning, Craig. Good morning, Dan.
So let's tell your story just for people that are not familiar with you. How long has it been since your last wager?
My last bet was February 10, 2013, so it's been almost 12 years now.
Well, congrats on that. That's awesome, 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 awesome. And I know you're proud of that, and you should be. Let's just tell people your story a bit before we get into the Right Choice Recovery Program. When were you first exposed to gambling, and what type of gambling was it?
I was probably 13 years old, and my father would take me to the racetrack. And being with him, and, you know, that was my first introduction to gambling. On a Saturday afternoon, spending time with him, it was kind of like innocent, you know. It was, you know, good memories, actually, of going. And, you know, that it was like a common bond. You know, it was like we would throw the baseball around, and he said, hey, kid, you want to go to the track? So to me, that was like innocent and, you know, kind of harmless at the time.
Yeah, it's funny. As kids growing up, you know, we view the kind of Norman Rockwell painting as the father-son relationship, like sitting on your dad's knee or learning how to fish or your dad teaching you how to ride, you know, your bike for the first time. But for a lot of people, because their dads did gamble or like going to the track, you know, it was the same kind of memory where, you know, my dad's larger than life, and wow, I'm at the horse track, and everything seems cooler at the horse track and the horses and the unique people that you get to meet. Were you smitten by it right away, or did it take some time?
No, I fell in love right away. And then, you know, I would watch him, you know, bet some ball games, you know, on Sunday. So I got into that a little bit. You know, right. We started, you know, right into high school, you know, with the football tickets. And, you know, I wasn't a very good gambler either, Craig. You know, a lot of guys, they win big money. You know, I was one of those guys that always chased my losses. You know, I was in Gamblers Anonymous when I was 16 years old already.
Wow.
So those 3 years, it spiraled out of control pretty quickly.
So just out of curiosity,
baseball cards and
how did you fund that at 15 and 16 years old?
Well, it was, you know, allowance money, and then you would sell some jewelry, and, you know, you'd work out deals with other kids because, you know, we're in school and we're gambling and I'm losing and I'm trying to chase my losses. And, you know, I didn't have the means and the access that these kids have now, but it spiraled out of control pretty quickly.
Give me an example so people can really understand it. When you say it spiraled out of control, at your worst, what were you doing? What was a normal day like gambling-wise?
You know, back then it was a lot different than it was when I stopped, obviously, you know, at 35. However, you know, if you owe kids money at school, you don't want to show your face and walk around the hallways, you know, owing them money. So you would take video games that you had, you would give them that in collateral of what you owed. You know, I remember, you know, pretty much giving them my necklace or, you know, my bracelet or baseball cards or memorabilia, anything to pay that debt. So, you know, it affects your self-esteem, as you know. I mean, in your pride and your ambition, you know, at an early age. You know, when I stopped at 35, I mean, you know, you're talking about Ponzi schemes and embezzling and writing bad checks. And, you know, it was just torture, Craig. I literally gambled for 19 years of my life. I was arrested 9 times. I had 2 DWIs because I was drunk and gambling. I was suicidal. I owed the whole world money. And you can't win. That's the whole thing to this. You know, it's like FanDuel and all these places come up with these crazy commercials and advertisements. You know, I would love to see more educational commercials come about that, not just if you have a problem gambling, you know, call 1-800-GAMBLER, but, you know, show a clip of your life, spiraling out of control. You remember the advertisements they used to have on TV where it was buzz driving is drunk driving. You know, problem gambling is really problem gambling, and show them what that looks like. I mean, nobody knows better than you and I what some of these consequences could be. I mean, it's, you're going to lie to yourself first, which is the scariest thing. And then, you know, once you start doing that and you're borrowing money and you're putting yourself in situations that you never thought you'd be in, you become desperate, hopeless, helpless, and pretty much suicidal.
Well, I want to get into that in detail in just a moment. But, Dan, I want to bring you in only because, you know, it may be repetitive for us, but you can speak eloquently on the commonality a lot of gamblers have, that when it started off, it did start innocently. And for a lot of us, not me in this particular case, but for a lot of people, it was a father, an uncle, an older brother, and it was done in the most innocent manner, the introduction to gambling, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Rob and I have that similarity. You know, I was introduced to it when I was probably a little before 12, and it was the racetrack. It was the Meadowlands racetrack with my father, and it was fun. You know, it's that connection. And, you know, to Rob's point, it's like you go out, you're doing these things, you're at a young age, and you start to, your world starts to revolve around it before you even realize it. You know, you're making friends around gambling, your conversation centers around gambling. If you can't pay things up, then you got to trade lunches at the cafeteria. You're trading baseball cards, football cards, you're flipping cards. I mean, everything's centered around action, excitement, maybe not so much escape at that point. I think it was more about the action and the excitement. But it seemed like a fun time with friends because all we talked about in school and all we learned about was substance use, like alcohol. Don't smoke cigarettes. You know, don't do drugs. Right. That's the stuff we talked about. No one ever talked about, hey, be careful of gambling. I mean, we even to this day, we still don't see a lot outside of the work that I'm doing. And we're doing it at IC360 around the country with education. But it does start innocently. And the first time people start to really talk about it is either after they've experienced harm or maybe when they're starting to get into older age, you know, college, 18. That's way too old because a lot of our emerging adults are experimenting at a way younger age.
Rob, I want to bring something up here. I get it, Dan gets it, but for the person listening right now who's not an addict, who has no connection to gambling addiction or any addiction whatsoever, you said, and it's very specific, that you weren't good at doing it even when you were a teenager. So the non-addict is going to listen to this and say, well, if you stunk at it as a teenager, why did you keep doing it for 19 years?
For two reasons. One, I wanted to chase my losses because, it became a subconscious obsession where I said to myself, if I could just get back to even, I could pay off all of what I owe. Well, the difference between the subconscious obsession versus, you know, a drug addict or an alcoholic is that they're digesting something or putting something there in their body that's a chemical that once they start, they can't stop. So the public could identify with that. Gambling, you don't know whether I'm drunk or I'm high. You don't know if I just won 5,000 or lost 10,000. It's just something you can't see.
Right. So now when you look back on your gambling life with clarity, as someone who's now a decade plus in recovery, you threw a bunch of things out there, and I don't want to gloss over it, where, you know, you started making bad decisions, you're in financial, you know, bad straits, obviously, but you said, you know, embezzlement, Ponzi scheme, suicide, all these negative things that come along with, you know, the depths of the addiction. Let's just walk through it. I'm assuming you at some point lost your freedom as a result of this, but walk us through the depths of your addiction as an adult, if you don't mind.
Well, being arrested 9 times and going to court for, you know, really writing bad checks and, you know, a Ponzi scheme and, you know, borrowing money that I couldn't pay. And it ended up in, you know, probation and fines and fees and restitution. And it just, you know, my whole life was a lie, Craig. You know, I lied to everybody, including myself, that I thought that I could just get even and get it back to pay everybody back. And, you know, what they tell us in Gamblers Anonymous is that we can't even make the smallest dream come true. Because even if I would have won all that money to make it, I wouldn't have stopped anyway.
Right. And when you say suicide, did you actually attempt it, contemplate it? How serious were you about that?
I was pretty serious. I contemplated it a bunch, whether or not back then, you know, 12 years ago, getting a gun and a permit and all that wasn't as accessible as it is now. But my big thing was to drive my car, you know, off a bridge. And I kept saying to myself, you know, the world would be a better place. I wouldn't have to deal with it. Or even worse, you know, I told my wife I had wanted to get into a really bad car accident and not kill myself, because that way people would feel sorry for me. And then that would give me a little freedom. It's just, the whole thing is just insane. You know, we all know insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I believe gamblers get an advanced insanity where they lie to themselves so much that they can't differentiate what's really true or false. And we live in this dream world. Yeah. We're doing these things that we don't want to do. How many times in your life, and I know for me, and I don't know about Dan, there was days where I woke up and I said to myself, no matter what, I don't want to gamble. I'm not going to gamble today, no matter what. And yet, 7:30 at night, you know, you're calling the bookie, you're sending a Western Union, you're borrowing money, you're doing whatever you have to do, because that urge, that obsession is so strong that you have to go do it. It's like for 12 hours throughout the course of the day, you weren't going to do it no matter what. And then when that thought came, you had to go.
Yeah, you make deals with yourself. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. All right, I'm only going to do one game, or I'm only going to play one hand, or whatever it might be. Let's take a quick break here on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
All right, welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig, Craig Carton, Dan Chilaro, and Rob from New Jersey joins us. Rob, considering all the heartbreak you caused yourself and your family and your loved ones, and kept going back for more and more and more, I do have to ask you, before we get to the good stuff and recovery and what you're doing now with your recovery program, is what was that bottom of the barrel moment that made you wake up one day and say, okay, I am going to go get help. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to gamble. And I'm going to commit myself to recovery. I can only imagine that last night or day of gambling was pretty bad.
It was terrible. It was February 9th into 10th. You know, I was getting kicked out of a family business. At that point, my father had said to me, get help, don't get help. I don't care. I'm done with you. Give me back the keys. My wife, you know, was going to Gammon for a long time and just was totally fed up and said, you lied to me again and now you owe more money. I'm leaving if you don't get help. And it was like I had that aha moment where I looked at my life as a whole for 19 years, coming in and out of GA, relapsing constantly, gambling, like you said earlier, making deals with yourself, trying to do it my way, really trying to gamble normally without the consequences that I was facing. And I had a court case that was pending, and I was facing 5 years in jail with no stipulation. I owed 15 different people money that were calling every day of every hour. I owed hundreds and hundreds, almost $750,000 to people that practically wanted to kill me. And I said, look, I don't know what I'm doing. I surrender. I give up. I'm going on an airplane. I'm going to rehab, and I'm going to get some help.
Dan, is that the norm where a gambler or an addicted gambler has that one final big loss, or is it more gradual for most people before they get help?
I think we tend to see it to be more gradual. You know, we get to the point, I've used this phrase before, where you almost get sick and tired of being sick and tired. You get to the point where the pain of continuing outweighs the pain of stopping. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you're in a, we all three of us have an unhealthy relationship with gambling. That's the way I will always say it. You know, I do not have a healthy relationship with gambling. But why do people stay in unhealthy relationships? Just, you know, at a universal level, sometimes it's scary to stop because of the unknown. So at least with the gambling, for example, we knew what to expect every day. All three of us knew what to expect. We knew there'd be pain. We knew there'd be misery. We know there'd be that chance for maybe some short-term pleasure, but ultimately at the end of the day, we stayed in it because it was comfortable and familiar, and it was scarier to stop than to continue. So we continue, but there comes an inflection point where we can't, and it's that definition of insanity. It's now the pain is just so great that I've got to try a different way, and it's different for everyone, but that's a couple of the thoughts that I have. It's just that relationship. And staying in an unhealthy relationship is something that people do in all different circumstances of life.
What about the people like me that really loved it? I enjoyed playing blackjack. The action of it, you know, the counting, the what it did for me, I guess dopamine levels in my brain and all that. You know, I'm not saying that's the norm or not, but what's the thought process for people like me that when I was at the height of my gambling, I'd be lying if I told you I didn't love it. I did.
I did, too. I love gambling, too, Craig. I agree with you. I love handicapping sports lines and researching and playing blackjack. Those are the two things. I played blackjack and bet on sports. Those were the two main things. But towards the end, and you even talk about this, like coming out of treatment, you had to go back and see if you could prove something to yourself. And it was like it just didn't hit the same. There was an inflection point for you. It was like it just didn't hit the same. It didn't feel the same. That maybe that love had changed. You know, for me, I had to go to prison. I could not have stopped. I commend people who can stop without getting to that point, because I was just on a fast train going to either prison insanity or death, as they describe it. I mean, I agree with you. It's something that we loved. It was safety. It was that cocoon of safety that you say, you know, that cocoon. Yeah. And it's just nice. But there comes that point where it just doesn't hit the same way.
Rob, I
agree with Dan a lot that he says, you know, something that kind of hit the nail on the head. When the pain outweighs the fear of the unknown, that's when I kind of had to do something about it. It got to a point where I couldn't live with it anymore, and I couldn't live without it. It was like the loneliest place in the world to be where, you know, all the fun and the enjoyment and the parlays and the Sunday morning action and the racetracks and the casinos and the borrowing. You know, it didn't. It got even past the point of being sick and tired. It's like you run out of energy. You run out of lies and excuses. And you just, you know, you kind of give up. You know, it's like my way didn't work. I tried every single way, Craig, for 19 years to do this. It's not like I did it for 6 months or two. And yeah, every day wasn't terrible. It wasn't painful every single day. But it was more painful than it wasn't towards the end, that's for sure.
Before we let you go, obviously life is much better now. Tell me about Right Choice Recovery, what it is, and why you set it up, how you set it up, and the success you guys have had helping fellow compulsive gamblers.
It's unbelievable. It started out as a dream during COVID, and we opened in September of 2022, and we've helped a lot of people. Actually, we have four guys that just celebrated 1 year clean of gambling.
Great.
We have a real curriculum for compulsive gambling or disordered gambling where, you know, a lot of gamblers don't want to be in other groups with just alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, their obsession with money is different than an alcoholic or, you know, a drug addict. You know, we have them take their inventory and take responsibility for their addiction and also their recovery. You know, they can't start recovery if you don't stop. So we need the abstinence piece first to really have them build up that self-esteem and help with their pride, ambition, and security, personal relationships, sexual relationships, money. You know, we help them deal with the resentments that they might have had over the years, their fears, you know, deal with causes and conditions. A lot of gamblers are predisposed genetically or they'll have gone through some kind of traumatic experience. Or some of them just have low self-esteem, or some have all three. So we try to really cater a specific curriculum to gamblers to help them deal with this and process this out. And it's just like going to the gym. Once you start working out, you start feeling better. You know, once you start putting forth an effort in your recovery, you start to feel better. And some of that shame and guilt goes away. And it's a real clinical approach, you know, to this, along with some holistic healing we do with Reiki and chiropractic services. The place is state of the art. It's gorgeous. We just expanded. We took over another suite. So it's over 7,000 square feet, Craig. I invite you, you know, and of course, Dan, love to have you guys. You know, we're so proud of what we do because it's a family owned and operated facility. So we treat each client is an individual, and each client has their own needs. So we care. We honestly care about them and their family. We have a great family program, too. I think, as you know, there's a family disease.
In the next couple of weeks, for sure, I'll swing over and check it out and see you guys. I think we need more centers like your place, more programs like yours. And I hope that in the next couple of years, you know, we see places like yours pop up, you know, across the country. Final question for you before we get out of here. Having gambled as often and as much as you did for the better part of two decades, and now seeing how great life can be for more than a decade without gambling, is there any part of you at all that misses it?
No, because I now have two kids. You know, one is 8, one's going to be 10 next week, and they never saw their dad in action. They never saw him drunk or high. I never had to push him out of the way because I was watching a field goal. I was present at the baseball games. I was there to help him with homework, get him on a school bus. You know, I have the trust and the respect with my wife. I have friends today, real friends. I got a life today because I gave up the one thing that was killing me. So I don't miss it because I have surrendered, Craig. I can't win. I can't. You might have, Dan might have, other people might have been able to win. I couldn't because I was the biggest loser. And in return, I got a life that I've always wanted and dreamed about by not gambling.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Congratulations. Really proud of you for how you turned your life around. I'll definitely come by and check out the program and appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob.
And thank you guys enough.
Dan, we got about 30 seconds. I'm sure we could talk to Rob at length for hours about his stories, but great to hear that he's doing well and that he has a facility for people like me and you. I just wanted to give you a chance to give some final thoughts on today's episode.
Yeah, I think it's good to always hear, you know, how people are doing. And then the facility is interesting, Craig, because Rob makes a good point. I think people with gambling-related problems don't always feel comfortable sharing with people who have substance use issues, alcohol and drugs, because there's a disconnect. So the fact that he has a gambling-specific program, I think, is really a great step in the right direction. And to your point, we need more of them popping up around the country as this grows.
Good job as always. We'll do this again next weekend. Hope you guys had a great Halloween. We're now in November. Couple months left, of course, of football, and we got the World Series that we all just got to watch. And we really very much appreciate you allowing us to do this show and listening to the show and supporting it, as we're in our fifth year now of doing it, and we'll continue to do it as long as they turn the power on. So Joe Beningo's up next, and we appreciate you listening. So hello, my name is Craig.